little bit of a different message today. What's your legacy? So I want to get you thinking about your legacy. That's my legacy. That's what was passed down to me. That's a picture of Frank Albert Inglis. That's my grandfather. Born and raised in the Salvation Army. And I'll explain to you a little bit more about that as we go along. And a whole lot of war medals and a bugle. Life's a relay race. Life does not have a beginning and an end. It's a relay race. And we're running along and we get born. And we get... something like that happens. That wasn't me. We get to a point in life where we're ready to take the baton from the one behind us. And so we take the baton and we start running and we run. And then we hand it on and we leave this mortal coil. I want you to think about the fact that when you get handed that baton, you've got a job to do. But you've also got to be preparing the next lot of runners. They're going to take that baton from you. You run with everything you got, but you've got to pass the baton on. So the next slide, please. This is one of two quotes that I use on Twitter quite regularly. If I have a Twitter account, you won't find me on there unless you know what my nickname is. Psalm 127, 3-5. Children are a heritage from the Lord. Offspring are a reward from him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. Man might be broke, but he's blessed. And because he's going to pass that on, that baton on to four runners, not just one. And that's how armies are born. That's our job. Children, we got to teach them as we go along. And Josh, you're watching right now. You're watching everything I'm doing. You're soaking it up. Being in church, you're watching what everybody here is doing. And you're learning about patterns and habits and things to do in your life. I've got some bad news for you, Josh, though. I'll be dead soon. It'll be my turn. Did you know that? Yeah? 70 is all I get. 70 years, or hopefully a little bit longer. And then it's your turn. And I don't say that as a joke, but I'm saying you've got to learn and watch, because I ain't going to be here forever and I'm going to pass it on to you. The next slide, please. I want to talk a little bit about Moses. So Moses goes up to the mountain and he gets the Ten Commandments from God. Number two, you shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven, above or on the earth, beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. Yeah, be afraid. He's a jealous God. Punishing the children for the sin of the parents, the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. So when God says he's a jealous God, the only comparison I can get to it is a marriage relationship. Luke, how's your wife going to take it if you decide, oh, I know that she's jealous, but no, I'm going to share myself around? Oh, I think you know the answer. I don't need to ask her. Marriage is a jealous relationship. That's the idea. It's you and God. It's not that you can share yourself with anybody else. You share yourself with God and God alone. That's what God's saying. I'm a jealous God. And if you go mucking around and worshipping all these other bits and pieces and statues and heaven knows what forever, I'm going to punish not only you, but the children for your sin to the third and fourth generation. That's going to be the legacy that we leave behind. Or those who love and keep my commandments to 1,000 generations. I don't know about you, that's something to think about. That's the legacy I'm leaving you, Josh. I either leave you a legacy of sin to your generation and the generations you've got coming after you, or I leave behind blessings and love to 1,000 generations. That was an interesting one for the disciples to get hold of, because the idea that, okay, so if I sin and I pass it on to my kids, then my kids, if there's something wrong with my kids, it's my fault. So we read in John 9, 1-3, and we've spoken about this recently. Jesus is walking along, sees a blind man from birth, and the disciples said, hey, Jesus, who sinned? Who was it, him or his parents? He must have been born blind. Someone did something wrong. Jesus turns around, and I like to think that Jesus would have scoffed at this one and go, guys, you just don't get it. You just don't get it. Neither he or his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. When Jesus died on the cross, that was it. That's the end of sin, and if you accept that, that's where the sin stays. The sin doesn't get passed on. You've got a choice to make whether you want to accept that or not. You don't suffer for sin, but traits get passed on. Who would agree that traits get passed on from parents to the kids? Yeah? I look at Josh and I think, oh dear, is that who I am? In a good way, Josh, in a good way. You read in the Old Testament, it goes on and on about how kings fathered kings. So-and-so begat so-and-so. And if the king was good, most of the time, the kids turned out pretty good. And they governed in love. When the dads were wicked and the kings were wicked, kids didn't turn out so good. And it's interesting if you follow the family tree, and Mike, you went through this, I think, last year, how you have the family tree and one of the kids goes bad, and that family tree almost dies off pretty quick and gets badder and badder as it goes on. And on the other side, those who live in the love of God, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and multiplies. Who's familiar with the Kennedy family? Yeah, JFK, pretty good president. Yeah. I dare say World War III would have broken out if he wasn't the president, if you haven't read about the Bay of Pigs and the Cuban Missile Crisis. He was a philanderer. You don't know what that means. Josh, don't look it up. You don't need to know. But read about the Kennedy boys, and read about the Kennedy's dad and work out where they got it from. Yeah. Dad Kennedy, my golly, it's just... I'll say it quick. He used to proposition the kids, girlfriends. He used to smuggle girls in to the White House. JFK and some of the boys were, while the wife was away, the cat was playing. And yet we sit here and we say, oh, Trump's a bad dude. Hey, have a look at the Kennedys. But it came from Dad. The Packers. How's James Packer going, anybody? I love me a bit of James Packer. He's just a ripper bloke, but oh my golly, he's messed up. Where did that come from? Dad. Dad was so messed up. Did some good for cricket, but Dad's so messed up. Where did Dad get it from? His dad. Yeah, it's I look at the Webb family. I pick on the Webbs now. Where does Luke get it from? You. Yeah. The things that Luke does and the man that he is comes from you. I don't have to look too far. The apple don't fall too far from the tree. The good and the bad things. So what are we reading there? That the traits get passed on the good side for 1,000 generations, but if you don't love God, it's going to go to the 3rd and 4th generation. Kids are just like sponges. Go to the next slide, please, Julian. Oh, that's a good pick. Proverbs 22:6 says, start children off on the way they should go. I did. And even when they are old, they will not turn from it. That's right, Josh, isn't it? There is no losing. Just a blip on the... Just a road bump. In Ephesians 6:4, bring up your children in the training and instruction of the Lord. Now, if you do that, they're going to learn habits. Going to church is really important. Next slide, Julian. Why is going to church important? We're reading Luke 2:39-41. So when Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth. Yawn, boring, whatever. Jesus is learning, he's paying attention, he's starting to get the habits of things that he needs to do. And the child grew and became strong, and he was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was on him. And every year, it says, every year, they went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. Why were they going? Because that's the custom of the day, that's what you're supposed to do. And when he was 12 years old, getting to that point where maybe he's got to start making decisions for himself, Josh, they went up to the festival according to the custom. Now, I won't read on the rest, but you know what happens. You know, should know the story. This is the one where Jesus decides to stay back. He's at a point now where he's got some things to do. He's got a job to do. So, mum and dad go home. Several days walk, and they realise Jesus isn't there. They get back, and he says, what are you looking for me here? I was about my dad's business. Jesus had the traits of his dad, but his parents raised him in the customs of the church and had attending church. Church is a good thing. It's a good thing. Yes, Josh? Good. Next slide. We're going to take a little bit of a detour here, and I'm going to be a little bit indulgent. I want to talk to you about a legacy. That's Francis James Inglis. That is my, my great-grandfather's brother. as you can tell, he served in the military. I'm going to read a little bit of a story about him, and I'll try and get this right. Francis James Inglis was the Gawler Salvation Army commanding officer. That means of the Gawler Salvation Army, he was the head priest or pastor, if you like. He was there in 1908. We know that because we can read it in the history books. He moved to Ararat when World War II began, and he enlisted in the Australian Imperial Force in 1916. He was at the front of the war for nearly 2 years. After 18 months, we have a copy of a letter that he wrote to his wife, and the letter said, "If you feel as grateful as I am to God for my constant protection and deliverance from sickness and hurt, you must always be conscious of it. 10,000 praises to Jesus' name. I believe I'm daily giving a more contemptuous treatment to things that do not matter in favour of a greater regard and care for things that do. Undoubtedly, I shall come out of this as a chastened and, I believe, purified man, in spite of all there is around me that would influence me otherwise. And it's all due to the saving and keeping grace of my Saviour." 6 months later, he was killed in action in France. 12 months prior to that, so if I skip back right into the middle of his tour of duty on the front lines, he was appointed to the position of mess caterer, which carried with it a promotion to the rank of corporal. So he's moving up in the world here. His duties would then be away from the firing line, and he wouldn't have to dodge bullets. Sounds like a good deal to me. But he had to purchase spirits, alcohol, for the use of officers and men. He said no. He said, "I'd rather go back to the firing line than compromise my principles. Or as my grandfather wrote in the journals we have, I'd rather return to the firing line than do violence to my conscience." Those principles meant that he paid for him with his life. After his death, his aged father, received a letter from the colonel in which the colonel admitted that though duty said he had to reprimand Private Inglis for disobeying orders, he had the highest regard for his principles and that he stood up. It's interesting where your legacy comes from, isn't it? How you research back 3-4 generations. The next slide. I'm going to continue on. That's Francis's nephew. So that's my grandfather, Frank Albert Inglis, on the left, and that's his brother, Maxwell Julian. Who's familiar with the Rats of Tobruk? Yep. So, quick history in the Rats of Tobruk. 14,000 Australians and 21,000 other Allied soldiers, they held the pivotal port city of Tobruk from April 1941 to November 1941. Who were they up against? They were up against Rommel's tank divisions. This is the Germans. This is the elite Germans. And one thing about Rommel and his tank divisions, to that point, they'd never been beaten. He ran over everybody, sometimes quite literally. Why were they called rats? Because they recycled stuff. They were stuck, if you're on the top of Africa, they were stuck right up the top, surrounded by the enemy, and they recycled weapons, they salvaged equipment. Their ships were described by the Germans as scrap iron. They defended below ground like rats in dugouts and trenches and tunnels from previous conflicts. And they outnumbered 2-1 and had zero air support against the Luftwaffe. These two were Rats of Tobruk. That's my heritage, that's my legacy. They enlisted for World War II in 1939. So my grandfather Frank was age 22. Max was 20. They were part of the 2nd 10th Battalion. Anyone in the basketball circles knows the 2nd 10th Battalion is where the Norwood Basketball Club came from. But you didn't know that, kids. Yeah. That's your heritage. Don't play for Norwood, by the way. Not a big fan. They were the first South Australian Battalion that was formed for the World War II for the Australian Imperial Force, and they fought in Egypt. And in 5 months, they had to be in Tobruk. And they went to Palestine. And they went to Syria. Then they made a quick trip home, and something happened while they were home, Julian. Next slide. Frank got married. So that's Frank on the right with my Nana Beryl, and on the far left is Maxwell and his girlfriend at the time. And you might say the sisters look familiar. Yeah, because they are sisters, yeah. The brothers ended up marrying the sisters, as it happens. They got married. Everything was pretty good. They went back to Papua New Guinea, and next slide. Maxwell died. Their armoured troop carrier, if you like, ran over a mine or the like, and boom, 7 of them went pretty quick, including my grandfather's brother. Next slide. Then they moved on to Borneo, and they were discharged and disbanded at the end of World War II. Now, that's my grandfather on the left, is the number one, as they label him. We picked up that photo from the War Memorial, by the way. Yeah. If you have ancestors who were fought in the wars and like, and look up some of the pictures, they're just marvellous. I had the privilege in 1990, my grandfather never spoke about the war. I had the privilege of sitting down with him. I was doing a project for school, and I thought, yeah, war's pretty cool. I'll ask Grandpa about the war. This could go right. And I sat down with him, and I spent probably, I think about the space of 1 to 2 hours with him. We just spoke about the war, and I got to ask him the question, why did you fight? Why would a Christian fight? And he spoke about some of the things you spoke about this morning, Mike. He said, our way of life is under attack. And he said, people are being attacked because of who they are. They haven't done anything wrong, but Germany's going around and just killing people and killing, not even just people, killing races just because they want to. He goes, I can't stand by and let that happen. He goes, it's painful. And he goes, I lost my brother and we're in the same battalion. He said, I didn't have a choice. It wasn't a choice to go and fight. 6 months later, after interviewing, that was 3 months prior to interviewing him, his youngest son was killed in a motorbike accident. 3 months after I interviewed him, so 6 months after my uncle passed away, my papa died. And that's my legacy. So when I see my kids helping other people, when I see Josh and the twins coming out with me and we're moving people's houses and stuff, I get this idea that what they're doing is they're helping the downtrodden, they're helping the weak, they're helping the uncool, they're helping these people out. And what are they saying, Josh? They're saying, he's with me. They're saying, I stand for those people. They're starting to form their own legacy. And you get to decide what your legacy is going to be. So if you want to do those things, good. You might end up with a great legacy, or you might end up someone that's cursed to the third and fourth generations. But if you're at church, you're doing it right. So those who've got kids, good start. You're at church today. Nick, can I borrow you? This is totally unscripted. As I can tell by Nick's face. Can you video it if you really want to? Yes. Yeah, I want you up on the stage, Nick. Okay. We read before that Psalm 27, like arrows in the hands of a warrior, are children born in one's youth. So, Nick, the arrows are in your quiver. You are blessed. You have arrows in your quiver. We're going to get one of those arrows out. This is why I got Nick to do it, because he's better than I am. I was going to say something about Xavier Dersma from Port Adelaide, but I won't. What's your job with an arrow? What do you do with it? I want you to tell me about what you do with the arrow.
Load it into a bow and you aim for a target, the middle of the target.
That's pretty much it. Do it. I want you to load the arrow in. Oh, not at me, crikeys. Where's the target? Shoot at one of them. So shoot it. So I can see you. Now, what are you doing now?
Aiming.
They just pull it and let it go, or taking care?
You take care. You got to make sure that you're calm and that it's you know, you're measured, and then you release it at the right time.
Taking into account for the wind, any other factors that are around. Yeah. Once you've shot that arrow, what do?
Nothing.
Thanks, Nick. Perfect. That's it. Thank you. You've done great. That's what raising kids is like. So when the Bible tells us that like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born as one's youth, it's that idea that you spend all that time until they reach adulthood of aiming that arrow as best as I possibly can, and you tweak it all the way along, knowing that the world's changing, the wind's changing, the weather's changing, and then you let go. You let go. They're gone. You can't get your kids back. You can't put the arrow back in. And the idea of that is, understand once your kids are gone, people, that you won't get them back, you only get one shot. Yeah. That's what raising kids is about. That's about a legacy. But you'll never stop praying for them. Yeah. You never stop supporting them. But hope, your turn's coming. Admittedly, I think I've got the arrow somewhere over there. But we'll get there, won't we? We'll get there. Yes? Just nod for me. That'll do. I want to ask you, though, what happens if you've got no mum or dad that guided you? If your legacy's broken, you don't have that. What about if your legacy's full of pain and hurt in the past, or maybe even now, and you might be one of the ones that's cursed from three or four generations to go? I'm going to tell you, you can break it. You can break that chain. It's a chain, but you can break it. It doesn't have to stay that way. And we're going to delve back into history again. Next slide. Andy Inglis. You're going to go, where's Andy fit in? That's Andy's kids I've listed there. Have a look at that. One thing I realise is they needed television. But putting that aside, six of his kids went to war, yeah, and fought for our country. Now, I don't know the history of all of them. The two I do know are Frank and Maxwell, as we spoke before. But I want to tell you the story of Andy, who's pictured there. Andy served in World War I. He was gassed while he was on the front line in France, and he suffered horrible relapses later in his life as a consequence. So he turned to alcohol. Now, you're probably thinking, why has he got the salvo hat on? I'll get to that. He turned to alcohol, and he became a horrible and abusive father and husband. Now, that might be familiar to some people here. Frank, one of his kids, is witnessing this, and he never spoke to me about it. My grandfather never spoke to me about it, but he spoke to my mum about it and explained it all, and mum shares a bit of it. Andy was not a nice man, but one day Andy heard the salvos. Andy was at a pub getting hammered, as he was, and I can imagine he's there at the pub and he's drinking to his heart's content, and then he's going to go home, and he's going to go home and beat up the missus and the kids and so on. Let's not mix our words about that. But he heard the salvo band and he thought, I'm going to turn around, that sounds good. And he went back, knowing, of course, that his brother was a salvo officer. He went back and he fell at his feet and God saved him. That's breaking the chain. That's breaking the chain. That's that stuff. Frank said to Andy, the next weekend it comes to Sunday, and Andy and Frank says to Andy, what are you doing, Andy? Why are you getting up, Dad? What's going on? And he says, I'm going to the Salvation Army. And Frank said, well, if it's good enough for you, it's good enough for me. I'm going to go too. And that's why I'm here. That's legacy. So people say to me, why don't you drink? That's why I don't drink. Yep. Because I've got alcoholics in my heritage, and it's been passed down to me. That's the damage that it can cause, but also how God can turn it around real quick. You can break the chain. I've got a friend who has been married more than once. And after the first one, when things went a little bit haywire, I said to him, your parents were split up when you were a teenager. You knew the pain of that, and you knew how difficult that was for you, because I grew up with you as part of it at school. Why did you do it? And he said to me, James, it's all I know. I thought that was just what you did. So the example was never set for him. He made a decision from that point on to fall on his knees to Jesus. He's now happily married, got a couple of great kids, and life's turned around. You can break it. But I want to say to you, how do you break it? 2 Corinthians 5:17 says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation is come, the old has gone, and the new is here. The next slide will tell you how to break that chain. It's right there. It's that simple. Get on your knees. We sang this morning, just before I came up, the power of sin is broken. Jesus overcame it all. He has won our freedom. Jesus has won it all. Game over. That's it. Our job is that. And if you want to stand in front of the cross and be proud and say, I don't need it, you might be cursing your generations three, four deep, and so on. Or you can be what Frank was to me. The cross, though, is about forgiving. And this is the hard bit. It's not only about God forgiving you, it's about God forgiving the people that have committed pain against you. Because that cross right there was for me too. Yes, God forgave a Port supporter. I'm not sure if he gave the crows, but never, that's another story. God forgave us that the pain was committed against us, but he also died on the cross for those who've caused pain against us. We've got to forgive them. We can't carry that pain around ourselves. All of us carry some sort of pain from 0 to 100 in our lives are things that people have done to us, but you leave it there, and you leave it there, and that chain gets broken, and then we move on and life gets better. You're going to have regrets, but I'll challenge you, let the regrets go and know from today on things are going to be good. Today on, I'm going to say no more chain for me. I'm not going to be beholden to the past. I'm going to get on with the future. I had a friend who got whose ex got married recently, and I rang her. I didn't tell Pauline that I rang her, but I said to her, "How are you going today? Your ex is getting married. How's things?" And she said, "I've given that to God. That's not a problem anymore." Yeah. She said, "I'm not bitter at all. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for our daughter." But she said, "I broke the chain." She goes, "I'm not going to be beholden to something in the past." How powerful is that? There was I worried about her, and she said, "No, it's already dealt with. Don't be concerned." Who's seen the movie I Can Only Imagine? Anyone seen it? Yep. Bart Millard. Yep. I'm not going to ruin the movie. Paul, and we have to get this movie somehow. I looked it up during the week, and I couldn't work out where to find it. I Can Only Imagine, by the way, is the best-selling Christian single of all time. Yeah, it's going to get played at my funeral. At the age of 10, Bart was dropped off at a Christian camp by Mum. And when he got home, Mum was out of there. Mum was packing her bags and leaving him, and he was left at home on his own with an abusive dad. Yeah. Shall I ruin the movie? No? Oh, well, I'm not going to, but you can imagine it has a good ending. Yeah. They broke the chain. They decided they were going to, at some point, break the chain, and that's what the movie's about. I want to show you the next slide. If you're having trouble thinking of breaking the chain, we had the privilege of hearing this guy speak. Now, when Jacob spoke, I wasn't sure how far he was going to go with it. He left some details out, and that's his choice. If you want to Google it, and Google Jacob's story, you can read some of the bits that he didn't share on the stage here. But Jacob's story is horrific, and I can't imagine the pain of finding your dad dead. Walking in, and there's your dad dead. Yeah, and his dad was not a good bloke, but his dad did his best. He was not a good guy. And if you ask Jacob, his family's fine now. He's moved on. And he says, I had to fall on my knees at the cross and say, "God, it's yours. I've dealt with it. It starts again." Jacob broke the chain. Yeah, you can break it too. Next slide. But you haven't got kids. Now, I hear people say, "I haven't got kids, how am I going to do this?" Well, you don't need kids to leave a legacy. So I put some pictures of some people up here. So, hey Josh, not sticking your tongue out in the bottom left there. It takes a village to raise children. And you mightn't think that you're going to be dead soon. You're going to be dead soon. Whether you got kids or not, we're all going to be dead soon. Death, taxes and Port Adelaide premierships. We'll win one day. Don't be like that. So those people up there, so the one holding up the boss mug, that's a guy who whose children moved on from him and from his life. He hung around and through sport and ministry, witnessed to a heck of a lot of people, but witnessed to me and my friends, as you can see there. That was in Perth one year. We all went away together. What a ripper bloke. He died a couple of years ago. The guy on the top right, that's Dean, so Gordon on the bottom left, Dean, and Lyndon down the bottom. It's just amazing sometimes you go through life and the impact that can be made on a child. So I was a teenager, going just through as teenagers do, and those two guys took an interest in my life. Lyndon's case is quite interesting. Lyndon's a bit of a big deal. He was a heck of a basketball player. He now plays trumpet on cruise ships. Pretty good. Another good salvo trumpet player. Yeah, don't think I'm one, but Lyndon certainly is. I was in grade, I can't remember, it's a bit sketchy, but I was in about grade 3 or 4 and playing school basketball, and we didn't have a coach. And Lyndon, who I didn't even know, he was one of those elite basketball players, he said to my parents, "Oh, I hear Jimmy needs a coach. I'll coach him." And he came out and took time out of his life to coach me and my kids. Yeah, and made a massive impact on me and my friends, because they're like, "Why is this guy doing this?" And we love Lyndon. And I said, "Well, he must care. Don't need kids to impact the next generation." And in Dean's case, Dean was the last guy cut from the Olympic team back in the 60s. One heck of a basketball player. He took an interest in me as a teenager and showed me so many things, not just about sport, but about life as well. And my kids know. Every time I see Dean, I've got to go and say hello to Coach. Yeah, I've got to say hello and say, how you doing? That much impact on me. You don't need kids. How do you have kids? Don't answer that. What curious. Any knucklehead can have kids. Yep. Doesn't take, it's not love. It's just something that a knucklehead can do, right? But it doesn't mean that they're raising the kids. So if you haven't got kids, I've got news for you. You're raising my kids, yeah? And you're raising everyone else's kids, particularly in church, but also in society. Give them your time. A word to a kid means so much. Give them your time. Give them your interest. Give them your love. Every now and then, just have a quiet word with them and guide them and pray for them. Because there's a world out there that wants to get our kids and ruin our kids, yeah? And they need your help. And in your case, if you haven't got kids, you've got more time than I've got. You've also got more money than I've got, but we won't go into that. They need your time. I had another man who unfortunately I couldn't find a photo of, a guy called Dean Pengelly. He was my prayer partner in the salvos. I had no idea what any of it meant. But I know that to this day, Dean's praying for me. Yeah. And if Dean's praying for me, he doesn't realise that he's praying for my kids, and he's praying for their kids and their kids and their kids. That's legacy. Next slide. In Psalm 78, 5-7, we read that he decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel. We're talking about God here, which he commanded their ancestors to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. So it goes on and on and on. I'm going to leave you with one last picture. There's two oldies in the front there. That's my mum. Happy Mother's Day, Mum, if you're listening. And my dad. So that's one of Frank's four kids. There's a lot of people in that photo. Talk about leaving a legacy. That the decision of Andy that day when he said, no more for me, I'm giving it over to God, and Frank followed him, resulted in that being one quarter of what Frank left behind. One quarter. So we talk about how we can influence the world. Well, breeding's good. Other than breeding, take time to invest in our kids and understand that everything that we do makes a difference. Josh, you paying attention? Good. Am I in there? I should be the tallest one. Oh, I'm hiding. Yes, I'm the creepy guy in the middle. If the musicians want to come, musicians coming? Any music? Yep. So in closing, I just want you to remember that and remember Andy and Frank and remember the fact that one little decision you can make can break the chain, but the power's in the cross. It's not something you can do. And I don't know about you, I've got addictions, I've got issues that I deal with every day. It's difficult. I'm going to say it's easy, but you give it to Jesus and it all turns around. We just close our eyes in prayer. Lord, I just want to thank you for those people who have got chains to break, because that's where your glory is going to be revealed. Just pray that they would fall on their knees. That's all we need to do, is just fall on our knees and just say, God, help. I can't do this on my own. I want to pray for those who have got kids. What a responsibility they've got. Just pray that they would follow the habits of Joseph and Mary. Take the kids to church. Get those kids in the right spot that they would learn and form good habits and learn about you. I want to pray for those without kids. That could be a challenge in itself. What do they leave behind? They leave my kids behind. They influence my kids. Lyndon, Dean, Gordy. Those guys influence me in ways they'll never know. I want to pray for everything we do today. I want to pray for how every decision we make can potentially influence 1,000 generations to come. Pray for this in Jesus' name, and thank you for our mums. Amen.